Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Deep Dive. We're going to be exploring how scholars analyze biblical texts today, especially the Old Testament. It's kind of like, looking at a building.
Okay.
An architect might zero in on the blueprints and a historian on, how it's built. But what we're really interested in is how people experience it.
Right.
As a finished structure.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I like that.
Yeah, and our guide for this deep dive is a lecture by Dr. Robert Van Noy.
Okay.
And he talks about redaction criticism, canonical criticism, and rhetorical criticism. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some of this stuff is pretty mind-blowing.
It really is. These approaches, they really try to get at the heart of the text as we have it now, rather than just, getting lost and trying to break it down into all these tiny pieces.
There's the difference between, taking apart a clock to see how it works and actually just enjoying the fact that it tells time.
Exactly. Instead of focusing on dissecting every little piece, they try to look at the bigger picture.
So let's start with this idea of moving beyond fragmentation.
Okay.
Dr. Van Noy explains that some scholars felt that earlier methods were missing the forest for the trees, so to speak.
Right.
They were so focused on the individual pieces that they weren't seeing the whole picture.
It's like a puzzle, You can examine each piece.
Right.
But you only see the full image when you put all the pieces together.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So one of these new approaches is called redaction criticism.
Mm.
Now, I'll be honest. When I first heard that term, I thought it was something to do with editing a newspaper.
Right, right. It's an understandable assumption. But in biblical studies, a redactor is the person who compiled and shaped the text.
Oh, okay.
So they decided what to include, what to leave out, and how to arrange everything.
Oh, okay. So they're like the editor of the Bible.
You got it.
Okay.
Redaction criticism is all about figuring out what the editor was thinking, why they put things together the way they did.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It helped us understand their intentions and how they shaped the final form of the text.
Ah.
Dr. Van Noy even mentions a scholar named Franz Rosenzweig, who called the redactor Rabbeinu.
Rabbeinu.
Which means our master in Hebrew.
Oh, wow.
Because in a way, the redactor is shaping how we understand the text even today.
Our master.
Yeah.
That's a powerful way to put it. So it's not just about who wrote the individual pieces.
Right.
But about how the editor put them all together.
Exactly. And that's a major shift in perspective. It means we can look at the Bible as a unified work, a product of deliberate choices, rather than just a collection of random fragments.
But if the editor did such a good job creating a seamless text, does that mean there weren't multiple sources involved?
Right.
I mean, what about the idea of multiple authors?
That's where things get really interesting. There's a scholar, Jay Barton, who talks about the disappearing redactor. He argues that the more skilled and influential we believe the redactor was, the less we need the idea of multiple sources to explain things.
Oh, okay.
Like inconsistencies or variations in style.
So the editor almost becomes like the author.
It is. It can be a little unsettling for scholars who've built their careers on the idea of multiple sources.
Right.
But it also opens up new ways of thinking about the Bible as a unified work.
Okay, so redaction criticism is about looking at the editor's role in shaping the text.
Yes.
But Dr. Van Noy also mentions that it's not without its controversies.
Right.
He brings up this whole thing about Robert H. Gundry and his commentary on Matthew.
Yes, Robert Gundry. His work caused quite a stir.
Yeah.
Especially among evangelical scholars.
Okay.
Gundry used redaction criticism to argue that some events described in Matthew might not be strictly historical.
So you're saying, he's saying that Matthew might have changed things up.
Yeah, he suggested that Matthew might have embellished certain details to emphasize theological points.
Wait, so he's saying that Matthew might have changed things up a bit to make a point.
Yeah.
That seems pretty bold.
It is.
Can you give us an example?
Well, for instance, Gundry suggested that Matthew might have changed the shepherds in the nativity story to wise men to highlight Jesus's mission to the Gentiles.
Really?
He believed Matthew was more concerned with conveying a message than with sticking to a purely historical account.
So for Gundry, Matthew was more of a storyteller than a historian.
In a way, yes. And you can imagine how this sparked a lot of debate.
Yeah.
Especially among those who hold a very literal view of scripture.
I can see how that would be controversial. It makes you think about the different ways people approach the Bible.
Absolutely.
And how those approaches can lead to very different interpretations.
Absolutely. And it's a good reminder that there's rarely a single right answer when it comes to biblical interpretation.
Okay. So we've talked about redaction criticism, which focuses on the editor's role.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Van Noy also mentions this other approach called canonical criticism. What's that all about?
Canonical criticism is really interesting. It was championed by a scholar named Brevard Childs.
Okay. And he emphasized looking at the Bible as scripture, not just a collection of ancient texts. He believed that the focus should be on the theological meaning of the final canonical form of the text.
So he's saying we should look at the Bible as a complete and authoritative work, not just a bunch of individual stories.
Exactly. He was less interested in breaking the text apart and tracing its development, what he called diachronic reconstruction.
Diachronic reconstruction.
And more interested in understanding its meaning as a whole. Think of it like appreciating a finished painting.
Okay.
You can analyze the individual brushstrokes, but you'll miss the beauty of the whole image.
Got it. So it's about focusing on the big picture, the overall message, rather than getting lost in the details.
Yes.
But he wasn't completely against looking at the historical context, was he?
No, not entirely. Childs acknowledged the value of historical analysis.
Okay.
But he saw it as a separate area of study. For him, the main focus should be on the theological meaning of the final form of the text. That makes sense. So for canonical criticism, it's about understanding the Bible as it presents itself to us.
Yes.
Not as a historical puzzle to be solved.
Precisely. And it's a powerful perspective that can really change how we read and interpret the Bible.
All right. So we've got redaction criticism and canonical criticism. What's next on our deep dive agenda?
Well, next up is rhetorical criticism. It's a fascinating approach that really delves into the Bible as literature.
Yeah.
Looking at how the text works is a piece of writing.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. But maybe we should pause here
and
let our listener digest all this amazing information.
Good idea. What are your thoughts so far? Anything that surprised you or stood out to you?
So we've explored redaction criticism and canonical criticism, two approaches that really highlight the Bible as a complete and intentionally crafted work.
Right.
But let's shift gears a bit and dive into this rhetorical criticism, which, as you mentioned, examines the Bible as literature.
Yeah, with rhetorical criticism, we're really putting on our literary glasses and looking at how the text works as a piece of writing.
Okay.
It's about appreciating the artistry, the storytelling techniques, the literary devices that make these stories so captivating.
So it's like we're analyzing the Bible the same way we might analyze a novel or a play.
Exactly. And just like with any great work of literature, the way the story is told, the language that's used, the characters that are developed,
right,
all of these elements contribute to the overall meaning and impact.
Dr. Vinoy mentioned some big names in this field, like Robert Alter and James Kugel.
Right.
But let's focus on Alter for a minute.
Okay.
He has this really interesting idea about biblical narratives being historicized prose fiction.
Yes. Robert Alter's work is fascinating. He argues that while many biblical stories are based on historical events, they're not necessarily meant to be read as straightforward historical accounts.
Great.
He sees them more as carefully crafted narratives that weave together historical details with legendary and even fictional elements.
Wait, so he's saying the Bible contains fiction? That seems like a pretty controversial claim.
It can be, especially for those who view the Bible as a literal historical document.
Right.
But Alter isn't suggesting that the Bible is made up. His point is that the biblical authors were master storytellers.
Right.
And they used literary techniques to create compelling narratives that convey profound truths.
So for Alter, it's not so much about whether the events happened exactly as described,
right,
but about the message they convey, the deeper truths they reveal.
Precisely. And he even compares the biblical authors to Shakespeare.
Really?
Arguing that they, like the bard, shaped historical events for dramatic and thematic effect.
Okay, so they were using history as a springboard for storytelling, kind of like how Shakespeare used historical figures and events as inspiration for his plays.
That's a great way to put it. They weren't just chronicling events.
Right.
They were crafting stories that aimed to reveal God's purposes and actions in the world.
This historicized prose fiction idea really changes how we might read the Bible, doesn't it?
It does.
It's like we're being invited to appreciate the artistry and the craft of the storytelling.
Yeah.
Rather than getting bogged down in debates about historical accuracy.
Exactly. And it opens up new avenues for understanding the characters, the themes, the symbolism that might not be as apparent if we only focus on a literal historical interpretation.
Now, Dr. Vinoy also mentioned this concept of the omniscient narrator in connection with Alter's work.
Right.
What exactly does that mean?
The omniscient narrator is a common literary device where the storyteller has complete knowledge of the events, the characters, even their thoughts and feelings.
So it's like the narrator has a God's eye view of the story.
You got it. And in the Bible, this omniscient narrator is often seen as representing the voice of God, revealing the divine perspective on the events unfolding.
That makes sense, but I'm guessing Alter might have a slightly different take on this, considering his whole historicized prose fiction idea.
You're right to be skeptical. Alter acknowledges the idea of an omniscient narrator, but sees it more as a literary device than necessarily evidence of divine inspiration.
So he's separating the storytelling technique from the theological implications.
Exactly. He's not denying the possibility of divine inspiration, but he's arguing that the omniscient narrator should be understood primarily as a literary tool used to create a particular kind of storytelling experience.
This is where it gets really interesting, because Dr. Van Hoy brings up another scholar, Lyle Esslinger, and his work on the book of 1 Samuel. Esslinger takes this idea of the omniscient narrator even further, doesn't he?
He does. Esslinger, focusing on 1 Samuel, makes the rather controversial claim that the omniscient narrator actually created the character of Yahweh.
Well, hold on a minute. He's saying that God, Yahweh, is a literary creation of the narrator.
He is. And it highlights the potential pitfalls of taking a purely literary approach to a text that holds such deep religious significance for so many people.
Right.
While Esslinger's work is provocative and opens up interesting questions about authorship and interpretation, it also raises important questions about how we reconcile a literary analysis with faith and belief.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. It seems like Esslinger is pushing the boundaries of biblical interpretation quite a bit with that claim.
He is.
But even if we don't fully agree with his conclusions,
right,
his work still highlights how powerful the role of the narrator is in shaping how we understand the story.
Absolutely. And Esslinger points to another interesting technique used by biblical narrators, the concept of reticence.
Reticence. What's that all about?
Reticence in literature is basically the idea of leaving things unsaid.
Okay.
It's those deliberate gaps or silences in the story that make the reader pause, think, and draw their own conclusions.
No, I get it. It's like those cliffhanger endings in movies or TV shows that leave you hanging, wanting more.
Exactly.
They make you think about what might happen next, what the characters might be thinking or feeling.
It's a brilliant technique for engaging the reader and drawing them deeper into the story.
Right.
It forces you to become an active participant in the storytelling process rather than just passively receiving information.
So biblical narrators use reticence to make us think, to make us work a little harder to understand the story and its deeper meaning.
Precisely. And it's one of the reasons why the Bible continues to be such a rich and rewarding text to study and interpret.
Yeah.
There's always more to uncover, more to ponder, more to debate.
Dr. Van Hoy emphasizes that there's been a surge in scholarship using rhetorical criticism.
Right.
It seems like it's become a very popular way of looking at the Bible.
It has.
And he points out that it's been used to challenge traditional force criticism.
Yes.
Which focused on dissecting the text.
Right.
Instead, rhetorical criticism emphasizes the unity of the text.
That's right. Scholars from various backgrounds, including both evangelical and non-evangelical scholars, have used rhetorical analysis to show how the Bible can be understood as a cohesive and well-crafted narrative.
Wow.
They're looking at the text as a unified whole, not just a collection of disparate parts.
So instead of breaking it apart, they're looking for the threads that weave it all together.
Exactly. They're paying attention to the literary techniques, the recurring themes, the character development,
right,
all the elements that contribute to the overall coherence of the narrative.
But even with all this emphasis on literary analysis, I'm guessing there are still some potential pitfalls to avoid. Dr. Van Hoy mentions that some scholars can get a little carried away with finding overly complex literary structures and interpretations.
He does, and he uses that amusing anecdote about Dr. Johnson critiquing a Shakespeare critic to illustrate this point.
Yeah.
Sometimes, in our eagerness to uncover hidden meanings and intricate patterns, we can end up creating more complexity than is actually there.
So it's about finding a balance. Right. Appreciating the artistry of the text without going overboard and reading things into it that aren't really there.
Exactly. It's like appreciating a beautiful painting.
Yeah.
You can admire the brushstrokes, the composition, the use of color, but you don't need to invent elaborate theories about what the painter was thinking or feeling to appreciate the beauty of the artwork.
That makes sense. So with all these different approaches to analyzing biblical texts, where does this leave us?
Right.
Is there one right way to approach the Bible?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And as Dr. Van Noy points out, there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
Each of these methods offers valuable insights, and they often complement each other.
Right.
It's not about finding the single correct interpretation, but about understanding the different lenses through which we can view and appreciate these incredibly rich and complex texts.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's not about finding the right answer, but about expanding our understanding and appreciating the different layers of meaning.
Precisely. And that's what makes studying the Bible such a fascinating and rewarding endeavor.
Yeah.
There's always something new to discover, something new to ponder, something new to challenge our assumptions.
It's like exploring a vast and intricate landscape. Each new perspective, each new approach reveals something different, something we might have missed before.
And as we continue to explore,
yeah,
we discover not only the richness of the text itself, but also the richness of our own capacity for understanding and interpretation.
It strikes me that exploring the Bible through these different lenses, you know, redaction, canonical, rhetorical, it's a bit like having a toolbox full of different instruments.
Yeah.
You know, we use a hammer for some tasks and a screwdriver for others.
Yeah.
It's all about choosing the right tool for the job.
That's a great way to put it. And sometimes we might even need to use multiple tools together to really get a complete understanding.
And the best part is, the more tools we have in our toolbox, the more we can appreciate the complexity and the beauty of what we're examining.
Exactly. It's not about finding the one right tool or the one right interpretation.
Right.
It's about expanding our understanding and appreciating the multifaceted nature of these texts.
I'm so energized by how these different approaches highlight the richness of the Bible.
Me too.
They help us see it not just as a historical document or a collection of stories, but as a skillfully crafted work of literature with layers upon layers of meaning.
And they invite us to engage with the text on multiple levels, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually.
Right.
It's a truly holistic way of approaching these powerful and influential writings.
Speaking of engaging with the text, I'd love to hear from you, dear listener.
Yes.
What's your preferred lens for reading the Bible? Do you tend to approach it from a historical perspective, a literary perspective, a theological perspective, or maybe a blend of all three?
And what happens when we try applying these different lenses to texts we might not usually think of in this way?
Oh, that's interesting.
What new insights might emerge if we look at a historical document through a literary lens?
That's a great question. I encourage you to play around with these different approaches, not just with the Bible, but with any text you encounter. You might be surprised at what you discover.
Reading with a critical and discerning eye can really open up new worlds of meaning and understanding.
Absolutely.
Whether we're reading the Bible, Shakespeare, or even the news headlines, paying attention to how the text works can make all the difference.
It's about becoming more aware of how language shapes our understanding, how stories persuade us, how authors use literary techniques to create a particular effect.
Absolutely.
It's like becoming a more conscious and engaged reader.
And who knows, you might even discover a few disappearing redactors lurking in those texts.
Uh-huh. That's a great image to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of biblical interpretation.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed the journey and that you'll continue to explore these texts with curiosity and an open mind.
Yes.
Until next time, happy reading.